I'm Brandon Reed, and you're listening to Real Estate for the Rest of Us, a podcast dedicated to demystifying the world of real estate investing. I want to cut through all the industry jargon and instead serve up actionable and unintimidating information that you can use in your own real estate journey. I interview real estate professionals, and we talk about their real-life experiences. It's real simple. Now let's get into the show. In today's episode, I talk with Tim Malazzo. One of the biggest hurdles that any investor faces, especially early on, is how to get funding for their deals. And in today's market, where speed to money is critical, having an option that affords you quick access into a variety of loan options to best suit your needs is invaluable. And that's exactly what Tim has built into his service, StackSource. Investors have transparency into the terms of the loans that they're being offered and can choose the best fit for exactly the strategy they're going into any particular deal with. During our conversation, I probe into various aspects of the very overwhelming and often veiled industry of real estate financing. Tim does a great job of demystifying the space and answering a lot of the questions that I know many investors face while they try to fund their deals and grow their portfolio. I hope that in this interview, you find practical insights that you can learn from or directly apply as you continue on your own journey in real estate. And now here's my conversation with Tim. All right, guys. Today on the podcast, we have Tim Malazzo. Tim, so good to have you here. How are you doing?
Brandon, good morning. Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing great.
Good, good. Awesome. Yeah. Excited to have you share your insights. I'm really, I'm passionate about this topic, about real estate financing, and just excited to dig in and hear your fresh perspective for my audience. Appreciate you taking the time. Let's dig right in, Tim, to kind of your background and experience more generally. Just kind of how did you get involved in the real estate world? I think I read somewhere that you're from a family with a background of real estate. Talk to me about how your journey kind of began in this world.
Yeah, real estate, when I first was exposed to it, was a topic at the dinner table growing up because my dad used to commute from New Jersey, where we lived, into New York City to work as a commercial real estate broker. And so he was helping people that owned office buildings fill them up with tenants and make some money. And I heard about landlords and what they were trying to accomplish and these negotiations with tenants. And really, the commercial side of real estate was actually my first touch. I never thought I would follow in the family footsteps and become a real estate broker. I really loved software and technology and smartphones that were coming out while I was in college. And so after studying finance, I went into working at big tech companies. So in New York, I was working in advertising technology. And it was years later that I saw the opportunity to combine technology and software with the real estate industry, which ultimately led me to become an entrepreneur and start my company, StackSource.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, that's neat. So you kind of, it's from the commercial side is what your dad was more involved in. And that was your, and I love it because I had the same bug growing up. You know, I was always disassembling gadgets in the house, rebuilding them. I was interested in the technology. Then I started getting involved in software and how that interests me. And it's interesting that you thought that, those paths would diverge. And that you wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't intersect. But then if I saw right, you worked for some big tech companies, for Google or Facebook. And then you, that was the passion you started digging into. And then you said, hey, how can these two things intersect? Which I think is really neat. Because to be honest, man, as you know more than anybody, the real estate industry is behind so much in a lot of the technology. They're just not implementing technology. And so I'm imagining that's something that you hit as a barrier, is people are resistant to that change in their business.
I think that has traditionally been the case where real estate, first of all, it's a slow moving industry for some good reasons, as well as some other you know, reasons that can be changed. So there are big transactions and you're talking about, let's be fair, we're talking about buildings, and buildings do not change overnight. And the uses of buildings don't change overnight, but that doesn't mean they don't change over time. The way we use properties, that's evolving. The way that we transact properties is evolving. The way that there's transparency into the information and the availability of transactions, it's very different today than it was 15 years ago when, you know, to residential or commercial alike, to get access to what's on the market, what's the data about what's happening in the market, you really had to go to brokers, either to a local broker that had local knowledge, or to a big national brokerage that had this data. But there wasn't even an aspect of, let me go see what's on the market first before I look, before I talk to anyone. There was people first, and there were gatekeepers and people with locks and keys holding information and holding, you know, available inventory. That started to evolve. On the residential side, you've got Zillow, you've got Rocket Mortgage, where you can see what houses are available, what mortgage might be available to me, and you can find those out quickly before talking to anyone. Then you're going to need help from people through the process to get expert advice, to make sure you're structuring it right, to make sure you're avoiding mistakes, to negotiate well. But the power and the information and the transparency is tilting further and further towards those who are transacting, the deal parties, and to the end users of real estate. And I saw that happening in spots, and I saw so many other spots where it could be happening. And one of those places that I expected there would be more transparency and more power in the hands of the end deal parties was in the commercial financing process.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so talk to me about how that kind of began. Where do you start with something like that? It's like, okay, you're finding all these realizations as you talk to real estate professionals in the industry. You start understanding where the needs are. What do you start building? Why do you start where you start? I mean, how'd that process begin?
The most basic idea for StackSource had a spark when I visited a real estate tech meetup in New York in 2015 with a couple of friends that were involved in the real estate industry. When I really wasn't at this time. I was in advertising technology, and I didn't realize all that was changing and taking place within the commercial real estate industry specifically. But I saw presentations from a couple of real estate tech startups that were intriguing to me. One of them was a crowdfunding portal that allowed real estate investors to click into deals online and get an allocation in deals online. And that was fascinating to me, but it immediately begs the question, okay, well, what about the flip side of crowdfunding for those that own a deal and they're looking to figure out where the capital is coming from, whether I have eligibility to get a loan from a bank, whether I could qualify to raise equity on one of these crowdfunding portals. Who's built the portal that allows me to see my menu of all the financing capital options? It seems so simple to me that somebody would aggregate, here are all these sources of capital, and make it really easy to access. And yet, when I looked around to the industry, there are people doing one of two things. One is they're going to lenders like their community bank that they know and trust already, or they're signing up with a loan broker that doesn't give them transparency and is far from efficient. And that process is going to take time, and it's going to be behind the curtain as far as what lenders are actually eligible for this and where are these term sheets coming from. And is this really the best term sheet that I qualify for? Because I can't see what the mortgage broker's doing, and I don't know what's happening behind the veil. So this was this simple idea: who has the online menu of financing options for real estate investments? And I didn't see a good enough answer, and that bugged me for months. To the point where I had to start building it.
Yeah, that's funny. Just kind of ate at you. That's the thing that keeps you up at night, and you're like, all right, whatever. I'm just going to build it. That's funny. So what does that look like? Talk me through the life cycle or thought process rather of somebody that uses your platform. Where do they, is this usually someone who, I'm guessing, you know, doesn't have cash of their own necessarily, or maybe it is and they just want to leverage debt, or how did they get started on it? What does it look like?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, having no cash of your own wouldn't be a good starting point, because you've got to have some type of equity in the deal. Even if you qualify, for instance, to, you know, get a preferred equity infusion on a deal, you're still going to have something of a common equity and some starting place. But actually, the first thing we built at StackSource really focused on that senior debt piece, where it's what loans can I qualify for? That was actually a little bit simpler for us to bring together. Here are the parameters for these major debt financing options, and then start filling in smaller regional and local banks and credit unions and debt funds onto our platform, onboarding each one and setting their parameters for, you know, these are the metrics they're looking for and the locations and the loan sizes, and here's what they're going to expect to see during the underwriting process. And we just started classifying and setting up these different loan programs on our platform so that if you're a borrower, if you have a deal and you are trying to leverage that deal, you can come in, give us a property address, and some basic metrics about the underwriting of your deal and the type of loan that you're looking for, and get matched with different lenders that are going to be a fit. And this is something that if you're buying a multifamily property in the Midwest, it can save you 4 phone calls to different banks and credit unions trying to find, hey, who's got that 30-year amortization that I'm really looking at? Or, who can underwrite this thing to a 75 LTV instead of a 70? We often, a lot of the early use cases of our platform were people looking for lower rates, higher leverage, non-recourse, or something else they're not getting from the lender they know already. And so that was the very first use case of the platform. It's just people doing rate shopping or term shopping of all these different lenders on our platform. And today, that's still one of the heaviest use cases on our platform.
Yeah, I imagine that's so much of the power of it is that transparency, as you mentioned, like somebody able to get on there and shop a bit and actually say like, okay, let me take back some of the power and understand actually what I'm looking at, actually what's available to me so I can make an informed decision about what works best for me because I have my best interest in mind. That makes a lot of sense. How do you get these, you start going to the credit union, start going to any of these lending sources. How are you getting them on your platform? You couldn't have had a user base before then because you have to have them to have a user base. So like, how did you attract them to your platform?
Yeah. So this is a classic chicken and egg problem of building any marketplace. And so for us as an online marketplace, you have to decide, are you going to go after the supply first? So for us, that's the money supply, the lenders, or are you going to go after demand, or are you going to do a little bit of each? If a borrower came to our portal and we launched on day one, and we ultimately launched StackSource as a platform in 2017, I had a co-founder at that point, and we had another software engineer working alongside us. We had a couple of members of an advisory board that had a ton of real estate finance experience. But if a borrower came to our platform and they were matched to zero lenders, that's a non-starter. So you have to have some supply first. So I started calling all these commercial real estate lenders. I had met some through my own personal network, but that was a limited amount. And so I called 100 lenders about being on our platform as lenders that real estate investors can be matched to on day one, pitched them on the vision of, hey, someday we're going to have a ton of real estate investors using this portal. Someday there's going to be this great flow of deals, and there's going to be the interface is going to be better than it is now in this early version. And just pitching this vision of this tech-enabled approach that's going to be more efficient. And I'll tell you what, Brandon, not a lot of them cared. Because banks and lenders and financial companies, they care about their next deal and getting their next deal done. So I wised up pretty quick into what I needed to say to lenders to actually get them on the platform and avoid the click and the hang up, which was, hey, I'm going to have a deal for you next week, but I need to know your parameters now and forget about the technology. We covered, once we did have a deal for them, we covered, hey, by the way, you got your first loan request today. Let's teach you how to use this portal to, to view this deal and to quote it. So we started the inverse and just started talking about deals. So we had only 20 lenders on the platform for day one of the more than 100 that I called. But as soon as we started doing deal flow, as soon as we showed that we
that's
can handle
this. That's not bad. 20 out of 100 signed up. That's not bad at all.
I think there are lenders that are probably desperate for deal flow that will look at just about anything. And a few of those were probably in that category. Yeah. But we started doing a rock back and forth between the chicken and the egg as soon as we could, signing up more lenders based on the fact that we had deal flow and doing a little bit of a just old school brokering in early days.
Yeah, I bet it was a lot of that. So when people come to your platform, what you mentioned some of it. There's LTV, there's rate. I mean, what are some of those key metrics that people are coming to see that would help them know, is this loan best fit for me?
Right. So there's a couple of metrics that would determine what is best. And there's not one agreed universal metric that says this deal is now better than it was, or this deal is better than that deal. There's a couple of metrics that people use. Let me
actually tell you, Tim, I hate to interrupt you, but context of the question or why I ask, how to answer, is just if someone's coming to your platform, looking for a loan, and they're a newer investor and they haven't done this before, maybe they have some cash and they're like, I want to invest it in real estate. I want you and your perspective to kind of give, what are they looking for? What helps them understand if the loan is right for them? So, yep, that's
absolutely. Yeah. First thing is you've got to be able to get your deal done, right? So leverage is one of those first things that says, you know, is the loan large enough that I can actually acquire this property? If I have 25% of the cash I need to acquire that property, is the loan at least 75% of the value of the property? Because if you can't get your deal done, that, you know, that's a non-starter. So that's what we'd call the LTV ratio, the loan to value. So the loan amount in comparison to the value of the property. And that's the first thing, and it's table stakes. Can I get my deal done? If you can get your deal done, then you optimize for something. You may be optimizing for a cash on cash return, meaning the cash flow that I get in year one or year five on this property, how much is that compared to the cash I had to put in? So some people are optimizing for cash on cash return. Your amortization is going to matter a lot to impact your cash on cash return. The interest rate is going to matter. Some people are optimizing for their internal rate of return or their IRR. And there, the amortization of the loan is a little bit less important. The rate is still very important, but it's really a combination of rate and leverage that's going to drive your IRR. Right. And you can be patient and say, well, listen, this is going to be really good for my deal over a 10-year horizon because I'm going to sell this building for a lot and, you know, I'm going to have a lot of equity at the end of this. So you may be optimizing for one of those, you may be optimizing for both. It's very simple and easy to say, I'm looking for a lower interest rate. And that's often true. You need to have a good interest rate, at least at some point in your deal. Sometimes you can forget about the interest rate for a little while because you're getting a higher leverage loan that helps you to add value to the property. And you're planning to refinance in year two or three. And you'll worry about getting the best interest rate then. Right now, you just want the most flexible loan that's going to go to the highest leverage. And so you model out the cash flow of your deal and you try to figure out, hey, what is it that I'm looking for right now in the financing? That's why financing is still a little bit of a trickier process where it's not as easy as just saying, hey, I always want a lower rate. There's a structure aspect to this where can we plan out which loan and which type of financing you'll have at what time, how much leverage, how much of your own money versus other people's money you're using to really maximize the returns. And that's something that our capital advisors step in and provide that type of support to say, hey, based on the business plan for this value-added, you know, medical office asset, it's not 100% leased. When it does get to 100% leased, you're going to qualify for this other financing that you don't qualify for yet. So right now, let's be patient on the interest rate and let's get into this one-year interest-only loan. There are these strategies you can use. Even beyond just looking for always the lowest rate right now, that can boost the returns of your deal. And our capital advisors provide that type of advice.
Oh, interesting. So I'm really curious about that last thing you said, but that's, I love how you broke that down, how it's not always, because that's what you'd think first. It's like, okay, I need a loan. What's the lowest? Just let me shop for the lowest interest rate. But it's not always like that. There's depends on what strategy you're going into the deal with. And I love how you and your company are paying attention to that. But the last thing you said there, your loan advisors, what does that look like? How are people getting advised? Do you guys provide that?
Yes. So even if you come online to StackSource and you put in all the information and your own underwriting, you get matched to lenders. In addition to getting matched to lenders and capital sources, you also get matched with one of our expert capital advisors. And if you've got your underwriting down pat and you're experienced and you know what you're doing, the capital advisor can be there as a sounding board. Again, we can help with structuring and the underwriting to put the best foot forward to get the best outcome out of all these capital sources. For many earlier investors that are still learning different capital structures and learning different asset types, they may rely more heavily on this capital advisor because all of our capital advisors have either been principal investors, lenders, or commercial mortgage brokers in past roles before joining StackSource. So that's like the prerequisite to be considered as a capital advisor. And then their full-time job is helping real estate investors get the best financing for their deals. They're seeing hundreds of deals. They are negotiating different loan packages with different lenders, you know, all day, all week. And we know what's negotiable. We know what's market, and we can advise on different, you know, basically financing structures and different capital stack strategies. So there's this idea of the capital stack. Maybe it's not just a loan, but maybe there's a loan and a preferred equity investor that in combination is going to be, you know, you're going to get a higher return as the equity investor because you're using more than one source of capital, for instance.
Yeah, that makes sense. Understanding again that strategy that you're going in with and then how to best find the right loan to match that, I can just see so much value in that. You also mentioned something else is refinancing. Maybe one of the best strategies to go in, get one type of loan, knowing that you're going to be refinancing and that there's a good pivot there. Are you guys brokering that refinancing? Do you guys do refinance? How does all that work?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you get matched to different types of capital sources based on the financing scenario. The biggest cut on financing scenario is like, what is the state of the property right now? Is it a piece of dirt and you're going to be developing a property there? In which case it's about getting a construction loan. That's something we support. You're going to be matched to different types of capital sources. It's going to be a different type of underwriting versus acquiring a deal that already exists. And maybe you're adding value. Maybe it's already stabilized. Often the business plan when you're refinancing is this property is doing great. The cash flow is there, you know, the net operating income's there and that's turning into cash flow. Often when you're refinancing, you may be rate shopping and you can be patient enough to say, hey, I want to get the very bottom interest rate or I want to get the very maximum leverage and pull cash out of my property. So those are very, kind of common financing scenarios. And we've done our fair share of all three of those scenarios between construction, acquisition, and refinancing. And each one is going to have its own quirks. You may be more of a time crunch if it's an acquisition because you've got a contract that's expiring. You may be more patient on the refinance and just be looking for the best interest rate. So you're matched with different financing options based on the scenario that you're in.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Let me touch a little bit on or ask you about the idea of going online, of doing this with technology and how that kind of that pain point you saw initially. And you said someone needs to be solving this. This can be better online. Someone who is looking for a first loan or one of their first or maybe they've done a few and they've done them in person at a local lender. And that's what they're comfortable with. That's certainly what you hear most if you go to, Joe Schmo Investor down the road and ask, like, how'd you get funded for a deal? A lot of them are, I got this credit union down the street and people are comfortable with that. What value? You had mentioned transparency. Talk me through it, some other aspects of like why it'd be better to go up to an online platform and do it that way versus something that feels so tried and true and trusted.
Yeah, well, there's a couple other reasons beyond the transparency of seeing who you're matched to. One would be when you see your matches, you can tell that it's a wider process where applicable.
Totally.
If I've got a hard financing scenario, this is a construction loan that I've already talked to five local banks and they don't want to do it. And here there are risk factors on this deal. There's not existing cash flow. There may be scenarios where you need to reach a wider net of capital sources. And that's something because we're automating pieces of the process, we can reach a wider net of capital sources. And we can say, listen, there's this bank that's out of state that can lend in this entire region and likes deals like this. And they have money earmarked for deals like this. Or here's a debt fund from New York. It's not a bank. You wouldn't think of them, but they have a fund raised not to buy properties, but only to lend on properties. And it's not going to be as cheap money interest rate wise as the bank, but they have this flexible underwriting that allows them to do this. And so a wider net of potential financing sources. I think you asked me how many lenders we had on the platform on day one, and it was 20. Well, now that we've been up and running for a few years and we're one of the fastest growing commercial mortgage companies, we have over 1,000 loan programs that are cataloged and available on our platform that you can match with. So there's that width of the market that you can capture. Totally. And then it's efficiency, because if you are in a time crunch, if you have a 1031 exchange to try to save on some taxes, if you have an acquisition deal and there's a tight turnaround on your financing contingency, you need to move with speed, or you just may be impatient and you may not want to wait for some commercial mortgage broker, to do their slow process over weeks. And it's going to be fast because we're automating pieces of the process that connects this deal to the right lenders.
Awesome. Yeah. That last bit you just mentioned, I'm curious about the timeline. What does that look like? Someone needs money. The deal's moving quickly. We all know what the market's like all over the country. They go to your platform, look for funding. What does that timeline look like?
Typically? You never want to be the slowest investor in the party. Even if you come back to a sales agent and say, like, listen, I've got a great offer for you and I'm a great investor. If you're just, a couple days slower on every step of the process versus other investors submitting offers, that's a killer right now. You do not want to be that one that is like behind the pack on investment deals. the very fastest you can get a loan on StackSource, a loan quote on StackSource will be instant. That will only happen for certain scenarios where it's a multifamily property that can go through like a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan program. That's where you can get an instant multifamily quote. For most loan scenarios, this is going to get human review to check on the underwriting and human review by the lenders who are then going to give you live quotes. But there's no delay in getting out to market to those lenders. And we are constantly building these features to boost lender engagement and to make that part of the process faster and boost their underwriting speed. So you're talking about a couple day turnaround to have multiple quotes from these different financial institutions. If it's a typical deal, construction, hairy deal, major value add where there's a lot of pieces to understand, it may take longer and it may warrant more conversation with your capital advisor up front to bring that to market the right way. If it's a standard acquisition deal and there's in-place cash flow, you know, we're talking about a couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, if it is one of those hairier deals where there's more complications, I mean, there's just no way that going this route and going in a technology platform route that it would take longer than going those hairy deals, those ones that are complicated. If you go to a local lender, there's going to be more conversation there. More, I mean, that's going to be even more difficult for them to get through that process. And you're right, the value is in speed when it comes to funding, and quick access to money is just critical right now. So that's really interesting.
The hairier deal you have, you don't want to have that same hour, 2 hours of explanation and conversation and, you know, wiggling through these different issues with 10 different lenders. You really don't, because 2 hours times 10 adds up quick. There's half a week just trying to talk to capital sources about this hairy deal you have, when that could be done concurrently by, you know, coming to one place that has access to those, you know, 10 capital sources that, you know, we can reach them all concurrently. That would be another killer of time.
Yeah, for sure. Let me ask you a bit more about the actual technology piece, the software. You know, I build software for Disney. I mentioned I work for Disney. And so I'm just curious, like, where have you hit roadblocks? What has been the challenge? I'm assuming it's a web app. And what have you hit? And it could be, yeah, with vendors, like getting people on the platform, just getting to people to market to understand that this is an option for them. What about the software has been challenging? I'm curious to know what hurdles you've reached as you've built your business.
Yeah, well, thankfully, I have a business partner that I co-founded this business with that is an expert at this. So he was a software engineer for Google most previously before joining me to found StackSource. We did not work together there, even though we both worked at Google. We worked there at different times. So we knew each other through social circles in New Jersey, actually. And, you know, he's a rock star software engineer. He was able to set up the architecture of how our web app would work, recruit other software engineers. At this point, we have a software engineering team in the US as well as another one overseas. Nice. Doing different parts of the platform. User experience is something that's not to be like understated as far as building modern tech businesses and web apps, because something can work technically. And we can say, hey, listen, mathematically and algorithmically, these are the right capital sources for you. But it's actually getting all users and 1,000 different users that can come to your platform to all understand and be able to interact with that successfully, with these lenders to be able to plug in. You mentioned that word trust before. For users on both sides of the marketplace, lenders and borrowers alike, to really trust the platform, that's really not a challenge to be understated. So in early days, we, you know, consulted with experts about user experience. Now we have a UX lead that is part of our team directly full-time at StackSource that, you know, makes that we measure, you know, where are people falling out of the process, if anywhere, and, you know, how do we boost trust in the process? How do we improve the platform so that it works well in all these different scenarios? User experience is one of the big hurdles. If you're looking, especially if you're a first-time entrepreneur, it should not be understated how important the user experience is. You can't just hire a software engineer and tell them, hey, go make sure this works. No. Can we make sure that this is actually solving the user's pain point in a way they understand? And that's one of the first major hurdles.
Yeah, for sure, dude. I couldn't agree more. You absolutely cannot hire a software engineer and say, I mean, they're going to come back to you with a deliverable that says like, it works. You're like, I understand it works, but nobody understands it. Or like nobody, it's like, look, you can check the box. It's like, nobody can see the checkbox, or it's down at the bottom, or those, all those things that feel trivial. It takes startups years to most of the time to understand that, oh shoot, UX matters. And we've built something that really works, but nobody's coming, or nobody's staying, or nobody's coming back. Yeah. Because especially you have to build that trust. A big part of that is even if the transaction goes through well, if it wasn't a pleasant experience through it, people aren't coming back. Like they'll seek another source. So that's awesome that you guys have identified that and have built that out. Let me go a little bit more general with my question here, Tim. You know, as you said, you grew up in a family with real estate, kind of around real estate. You took your own path as you started going to technology. But as you kind of stepped back into it and built your own business in this space, I'm sure there was so much you had to learn. Gosh, real estate financing is complex. And I mean, that's what you built your business on the back of, is like, this is a complex process. We can simplify it for you. So what did you have to, well, let me ask it this way. There's a lot you had to learn to build your business. How did you go about learning that? What were some of the things you did that were the most helpful for your real estate education? Was it books? Was it seminars? Was it finding a mentor in person? I mean, what were some of those things?
All of the above, honestly. Okay. If you're looking to start a business and you're not hungry to learn, I would caution you. Like, mm-hmm. I encourage entrepreneurship like to the nth degree. But if you're not hungry to learn and you're not curious, yeah. and you're not trying to learn in every way you can, it's just probably not for you. So for me, books, yes. Mentors, yes. Another thing that I did was show up in a suit with a tie to some of these real estate finance events in New York City. And I was still in my 20s and I was, in a suit and I was just asking dumb questions at these real estate finance events with these like rich, powerful, like real estate finance leaders. And I was not ashamed to like ask questions and raise my hand and, you know, walk up to people after panels that they gave. And I had a little notebook where I was taking all the notes that I possibly could about the ins and outs of, you know, different types of loan structures. And people thought I was just, you know, some first year analyst, you know, at a real estate finance firm. When truthfully, I was actually, you know, working on a platform in the background. So showing up and talking to people. Another thing that I've done over the last few years is whenever I learn about one of these industry insider topics and how it really works, and that, you know, maybe even, you know, your average real estate investor doesn't really understand how it works on the back end of a loan and why a loan is structured a certain way. Every time I learned a little insider secret in the industry, I would write about it. And so those went on the StackSource blog. And some of these, me learning about one of these topics that, you know, wasn't widely known or widely understood, and I tried to write it in like the simplest way and the simplest understanding. First of all, that was my understanding because my understanding was simple.
Sure.
Those have become some of our most evergreen content as far as the blogs that people read again and again can be for me like 3 or 4 years ago, just explaining some topic about, you know, why it's structured this way.
I bet, man. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole vibe of this podcast, is to take some of these complex topics and talk to people who can help simplify it and break it down exactly like that. Yeah, I love that. I love that you're going to these events and talking to these people, just talking to them after panels, asking questions. And I love the word you used, is curious. You know, I have two young kids, and I think I've said multiple times, if there's one thing I could instill in my kids that feels the most important to me in any area, in any path they take in life, is curiosity. I want them to be curious. I want them to be asking questions, constantly learning. And you're right, an entrepreneur, that's a critical trait. I have one more question for you here, Tim. And that's, you know, if you could go back to the version of yourself, that young guy in your 20s in a suit, just asking dumb questions, just getting started, trying to build a business, you could teach that version of yourself one thing that could save you the most trouble over the remaining years of your journey. What might that be? What's something that could really help make that path easier?
Oh, okay. I think the most painful mistakes are people mistakes. Because one, people mistakes can damage your business, but two, people mistakes can be painful to you and to that other person. So for instance, hiring somebody into a role that was not a good fit for them. That's something that I did early on, is I hired somebody into a role, and this person had awesome skills and personality, but it just wasn't the right role for them. They didn't see that, but neither did I. And so being better at interviewing and, you know, thinking about the right fit for the right person earlier on could have saved some heartache for me and for another person. And so I would have said to focus not just on the technical aspects and the ins and outs and strategy. It's not everything is strategy. As a matter of fact, people is even more important than strategy. Totally. So learn as much as you can in that arena, how to interview well, how to place people in the right roles and how to coach them and how to identify that quickly. The faster that I can learn that, the more, you know, the results would have multiplied more quickly.
Yeah, I love that answer, Tim. Soft skills are so important. And making sure that the right people are in the right spaces to help grow them and grow your business is people is one of the hardest parts about building a business. I hear that over and over again, is that it's just really hard to get the people right, and identifying what roles they should be in is, I know, a huge part of that. Well, Tim, this was invaluable. I mean, I learned a lot. I took crazy amount of notes. This was really, really helpful for me. I'm sure it's going to be for my listeners. If what you had to say about specifically your platform in particular resonated with them and they'd like to give it a try, where can they find them? Where can they find you?
Sure. Well, stacksource.com is a good place to find me and some of my colleagues that are commercial financing experts. And depending on where you're listening from, we may have a capital advisor in your region or in your city. But I'm Tim at stacksource.com. If you'd like to shoot me an email, if you search Tim Milazzo on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter, I'm currently the first one that comes up. And Milazzo is M-I-L-A-Z-Z-O. If you're not, you know, if you don't have handy access to the show notes here, but Tim Milazzo, StackSource, Tim at StackSource.com.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. Yep, that sounds good. I'll make sure to put all that in the show notes. Tim, thanks so much for taking the time, man. Like I said, this was just invaluable, and I appreciate you breaking that down for my listeners.
Thanks so much, Brandon. It's been great.
If you guys enjoy the show, please head over to iTunes and leave a review. That actually helps a lot to get the podcast out there, as people are looking for helpful real estate investing resources online. You can also like our Facebook page to keep up to date with new episodes as they publish. And don't forget to subscribe through whatever podcast player that you use. If you have questions about a specific topic that we covered, or if you have a suggestion about another area that you'd like to see me dig into, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out. I'd love to get in touch. You can email me at brandon@realestateforthestofus.com. Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. One show at a time, we'll work to make real estate investing accessible for the rest of us.